A few years ago, I read Da Vinci and the painting of The Last Supper. It turned out that this story has no historical basis, so it's an urban legend. But recently, I found it again in a confirmation program, Decision Point, just a couple of weeks ago as a video. So it brought back the memories of when I read it for the first time, and I would like to share it with you. I think it's an appropriate commentary to today's readings. It says that when Leonardo da Vinci was commissioned the painting of The Last Supper by the Duke of Milan, Ludovico Sforza, he took a long time to complete that painting. Why? He wanted, first of all, to choose the right models for the 13 people, Jesus and the 12 apostles, that he had to paint. He wanted for each of them to choose a person, a model who could inspire him to paint each character according to their personality, their specific identity. And so he began searching, and the first person he wanted to paint was Jesus. He looked everywhere for someone whose face suggested love, tenderness, compassion, innocence. And finally, he found one. His name, according to the story, was Pietro Bandinelli, a young in the choir. So he asked him if he would sit for him to model as he painted the face of Jesus. And so he did. Then Da Vinci moved on to the other characters of the painting, and he found one by one models for 11 of the 12 apostles. It took him months, indeed years. The last one to be painted was Judas. And Da Vinci was looking for someone whose face was marked by despair, sin, vice. He looked everywhere, could not find the right person, the right model, until one day he was told of a man in jail, a murderer, who they suggested might be the appropriate model for Judas. He went and immediately knew he wanted him. So arrangements were made for this convict to be brought to the convent Santa Maria delle Grazie, where he was painting the Last Supper. And as he painted the face of Judah, the face of this convict grew sad every day, filled with despair, until he broke down in tears. And Da Vinci asked him, "What's the matter? What's wrong?" And he said, "Don't you remember me?" "No," said Da Vinci, "I've never seen you before." And he said, "I'm Pietro Bandinelli. I was here a few years ago. I was the model for Jesus." A story that, as I say, it's probably an urban legend. I did not find any historical basis for this. But it's a story that can teach us something, that in each of us there is a Jesus and a Judas. We can be both. It's up to us, the choices we make, whether we follow God or whether we follow our own whims, we fall for our temptations. We have today in the first reading the well-known story of Adam and Eve, how they were tempted. Now, think of this. Adam and Eve were living in paradise, literally. They had it all. They received all kind of goodies from the Lord, free, no strings attached. The only limitation was indeed that they trusted God. That tree of the knowledge of good and evil, basically, it's a symbol of the fact that with our own free will, we could choose not only good, but also evil. So the Lord asks them not to touch that tree In other words, ask them, trust me, I know what is good for you. But they were tempted exactly not to trust God. What if he's not telling you the whole truth? What if he's hiding something from you? Why don't you find out for yourself what is good and evil? I believe this is the fundamental temptation we all face. And to prove it, once again, I found an article a few years ago, I believe it was 2011. I printed it, I have it, I keep it, and once in a while I go back to it. So great an impact it made on me. It's an op-ed by David Brooks in the New York Times, titled, If It Feels Right. He tells of a research conducted by Notre Dame's sociology department among the American youth on morality. And the conclusion of this study is depressing. Not that young people are living a more immoral life than previous generation. Not in that sense, not necessarily. But in the sense that young people don't have an idea of what morality truly is. When asked about whether something is right or wrong, most of them answered, well, it depends how I feel about it. But since we all feel differently, really there isn't anything that is per se good or evil. It's up to the individual to choose. You decide what is good and what is evil. Exactly what Satan told Adam and Eve. You decide. You deserve to have your own knowledge of good and evil. That's the temptation I believe we all face. That we think that we know best, and therefore we do not trust God. We do not trust that there is a natural order to be followed. We are tempted to become the measure of what is right and what is wrong. Jesus too was tempted, as we heard in today's gospel. We might be shocked, scandalized by this. How could Jesus be tempted? Well, let me answer with a quote from Bishop Fulton Sheen, who said, "You are not tempted because you are evil. You are tempted because you're human." Temptation is part of being human. But Jesus teaches us to fight temptation. Temptation is not our friend. Just like the serpent was not friend of Adam and Eve, did not want their best, wanted them to fall, wanted them to really destroy the paradise they were in, and he succeeded. We read that immediately after their sin, they began to blame each other. They were afraid of God, they went hiding. They were ashamed of their sexuality, which before was pure, transparent, just beautiful. We too are tempted, and the results are that we lose the innocence, we lose the trust in God, and we become really our worst enemies. Jesus' temptations were the first. Transform these stones into bread. Take care of your own needs. You first. That's the temptation that we all feel. Put yourself first. What's the answer? The answer is fasting, which is what we are doing during this Lent. Fasting helps us purify our needs, control our needs, not allow them to control us. The second temptation was a temptation to wanting to be served. Throw yourself off the parapet of the temple and God will send his angels to serve you. And again, this is a temptation I can easily apply to myself. The desire to be served. What's the answer? The answer is almsgiving. The other discipline of Lent, when you don't put your needs first, when you don't want to be served, but you put yourself at the service of others, of their needs, their poverty. And the final temptation to obtain power, honor, privileges. You are the Son of God, after all. But Jesus answers by giving only God and glory. And that's what we do with the discipline of prayer, the third discipline of Lent. By prayer, we acknowledge that only God deserves our worship, our honor. What are our temptations? I think that we each face our own temptation. What tempts you might not tempt me, and vice versa. But there are some that we all face. I believe that one of the most common is the temptation of the sin of omission, which is not doing what we could do, or procrastination, living for tomorrow, what I could do now. Also the sin of being superficial or living a mediocre Christianity. You know, I'm not too bad. I don't kill anyone. I don't steal. I guess I'm okay. Instead of going deeper, really stepping out of our comfort zones, doing a little more, a little better. Consider Lent as a spiritual gym, early in the morning or late at night to run, to lift weights, and so forth. It's a spiritual battle. Lent is indeed a spiritual battle to overcome our own temptation. And let me suggest a very practical thing to do. Name your own temptations. Call them by name. Identify them. It would be easier to fight them once you know what they are, who they are. Amen.